Ladies and gentlemen, from here to eternity, the James Whale Radio Show.
James Whale, the voice of reason on the James Whale Radio Show.
Ah, here we are again. Here we are again. I'm fed up with the water. I don't know whether it's been raining where you are listening to me at the moment. Where I am, it has been persistently pouring for days. But hopefully it'll go away. We've had a dry spell and now we're having a wet spell. And I like it. Robbo, I don't like it. Go and get somebody to turn the flipping taps off.
All right, or I could stand on the pipe.
Okay, well, you stand on the pipe and we will... actually, I've got something I've got to talk to you about in a moment. First of all, though, later on, towards the end of the programme, I will be giving my considered opinion on the brand new Ford EcoSport. It's what they call an SUV. And I have been driving it for the last month. I've got to give it back now. Bit of a shame. But I'll give you my considered opinion and any little niggles or problems I found with it, I'll let you know as well. So for those of you looking for a nice, little sort of chunky little machine that gives you a better view than if you're sitting with your bottom scraping along the floor, the Ford EcoSport. And you know, remarkably, I think you're supposed to be able to get 60-odd miles to the gallon out of it. I've never done that because I don't think I drive very well. But I have been getting nearly 40 miles to the gallon out of it, which for me, for anything, is remarkable. And as it's one of these cars which has all sorts of green things with it, you don't have to pay tax. There's no car tax on it either. So I'll tell you more about that later. Now, Robbo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, look, hang on. I go into my postbox today, and what is all this about complaints?
Yeah, we've had some complaints.
Aral Adams has got in touch. He said, "Mr. Whale, I'm listening to the show in L.A., and I have nothing to complain about." Well, of course I do. Did I mention I live in L.A.? That's Aral Adams. Well, that's not real. Why did you send me that as a complaint? He's not complaining.
He says he lives in L.A. He's complaining about L.A.
Yeah. And a David Longbottom.
Oh, yeah.
He's also got in touch with me and he says, "I'm looking forward to Rob's apology on next week's show for the childish sniggering at my surname."
Yeah. That was during the gay section, wasn't it?
Did we have a gay section?
Yeah, the coming out section we had last week.
Well, that wasn't a gay section. You could have come out as anything you wanted to do.
Ah, okay. I thought it was implied.
Yeah. And is this, you've sent me a written apology for my perusal. Is that right?
Yeah.
Would you like to read it out?
Okay. "Dear Mr. Longbottom, I'm really sorry for my outburst when James was reading your name on last week's show. If I have in any way offended your family name, which dates back to the Anglo-Saxons, I'm deeply sorry. I wish you and your Longbottom family and future Longbottoms all the best. Thank you for taking the time to point out my childish behaviour and for taking the time for listening to the show. Rob."
Yeah. I don't think you said that with as much sincerity as I think you might have needed.
Well, he's not getting any more of an apology. That's it. You know, if you don't like it, you can go to a runner.
Longbottom is not necessarily an Anglo-Saxon name either.
I Wikipedia'd it.
Well, you don't believe anything you see in Wikipedia, do you?
Well, I believe everything about you on Wikipedia.
Well, I wouldn't. And the way you've put here, "I wish you and your Longbottom family and future Longbottoms." It's slightly sarcastic, don't you think?
It's not meant to be sarcastic.
Is it not? No. Well, I'll keep an eye on that. If anybody does have any complaints about my producer, of course, feel free just to email me, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. Just, if he's doing anything I'm not aware of, get in touch, let me know. And then we will sort this out a little later. Right. Now, I want to talk about another issue that really is quite close to my heart. A couple on this programme today, actually. Dog theft is on the increase. This is a serious point, by the way, Rob, before you start sniggering. Dog theft is on the increase in this country. And I don't know if we're all fans of Twitter. I tweet out quite a lot of stuff about lost dogs and problems with dogs. I was talking to a gentleman who's just had two of his family pets stolen, literally stolen from out of the garden. Now, this is something that happens all over the country. And there are all kinds of reasons. Some dogs now are very valuable. Designer dogs can be sold on. If you go to a breeder and you want a, I don't know, a cockapoo, for instance, it's going to cost you around about £700, I think. If you offered one, if you like, on the black market, probably 200 quid. And that's the sort of thing that's making people do this. But I don't actually think the deterrent is enough. Personally, I think I'd have your hands off for going anywhere near somebody's pet. It is despicable. And there's another problem that has arisen in this country. It's the unspoken one. And that is the rise in dogfighting clubs. You could call them clubs. They are inadequate human beings. Now, I know none of them will be listening to this program because most of them don't have the intellect to be able to access this show. But anybody who knows anyone who is involved in that, steer well clear, because it is time now, I think, that we highlight the appalling situation that in every town, probably in this country, there is a bunch of inadequate human beings who are fighting dogs. A lot of money is bet on it. It has become part of an underground black market that is really nasty. And some of the stories I've heard from various people, I haven't yet been able to get the police to confirm a lot of these things, but there have been, I believe, pets stolen purely to put in with fighting dogs, to give them a little bit of practice. The pets that are stolen often get thrown into the ring with a fighting dog to get pulled apart, just to give it a bit of exercise. Now, I don't think we are spending enough time finding these people, because most of these people who are involved, all of these people who are involved in this, I would imagine, are involved with other kinds of criminality as well. So for those people who don't value animals as much as I do, maybe that will get them motivated to try and find something out about them. But there are people now looking into this, and hopefully the government will be encouraged to bring out legislation that actually improves the severity of the prison terms. I don't want people fined for being involved in dogfighting. I think people should face a minimum of 5 years, maybe even longer, for treating animals in this way. And until we wipe this out, we would continue to have this underclass of inadequate human beings who do this. So anybody with any information, please get in touch. JamesWellRadio@gmail.com. Just anything you've seen or heard, get in touch and see if we can't start highlighting a problem that lots of people don't want to talk about. Also, particularly in the north of England, in certain areas where betting on animal fighting is fairly prevalent, and some people are concerned about it because it becomes very popular in certain ethnic areas. So some people get concerned about being called racist. Well, I'm not concerned about anything like that. I am concerned about cruelty and people who are abusing animals for their own gain. Cockfighting is pretty widespread in this country, and I know that quite a lot of people involved in law enforcement know where some of this goes on and do tend to turn a bit of a blind eye, which I think is very unfortunate. But I have got that off my chest, so I feel slightly better about it now. Rob, you may breathe. Good. And you've got a new dog, Rob, a lovely looking dog, and I think you should be very, very careful with it as well.
Yep.
Never leave it in the garden to run around on its own.
Definitely not.
No. Okay, so is it time for an advert? I think it probably is. Should we take a break for an advert? And don't forget, by the way, go to our website, jameswellradio.co.uk, and you can do all sorts of things. Go into our shop, and you can get your Christmas presents. Now, this year, of course, I'm not a big fan of Christmas, really, but, you know, I like to give and receive a few presents to my friends. I don't do the whole religious bit, but I do like a bit of a booze up, it has to be said. and I'm sure you do too. So you want to give something nice to somebody? Well, what about James Whale Radio mug? James Whale Radio t-shirt, sweatshirt, baseball cap. And there's all sorts of other stuff available too. For instance, you can get a lookalike Rob.
What?
No, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe that's a bad idea. But anyway, check out our shop. And also find out how you can get movies for a month absolutely free. And over Christmas, that might be a nice idea. Just click on Love Film, follow the links, and you can have a month's worth of movies free. Anything else?
No. Do I need to play an advert now? You've done everything.
I think I have, actually. Shall we go to a piece of music? Oh, no, we'll leave the music until a bit later. Are you going to do your little tech talk or not?
I can do a very small tech talk because we've got a lot on the show this week.
Have you?
Yeah.
Have you got anything to talk about technically?
Can I give out a public information broadcast?
I don't know. Can you give out a public information broadcast?
Not really, but can I give out some information?
Could you get on with it?
Okay, tech talk this week, some advice. A lot of people come into our little computer shop where I work in, which is my full-time job, and they have been scammed by people purporting to be from Microsoft. And the way it works is that they get a phone call saying, "Hi, I'm from Microsoft. We've checked our systems and your computer is contaminated with viruses. Could you please go to your computer and check for these files?" You go there, and of course the files are on your machine because they're on everyone's machine. And to get rid of those files, you need to pay Microsoft 70, 80 quid, of which while they're doing all this, they're taking control of your computer, lock your computer down, put a password on it, and if you don't give them the money, you'll never have access to your stuff again. So, if you ever get a phone call from anyone about your computer, just tell them you don't have a computer and hang up the phone.
Yeah, you can do that. I got one, and I think it was an Indian-sounding gentleman. I don't know, do they come from other countries, or do
mostly
they come
from other countries? Yeah, it's untraceable.
Yeah, we don't know. Untraceable, okay. Because a number came up, and you ring the number back, and it's the number doesn't exist.
Mm.
But yes, put the phone down, or do what I do. Every Anglo-Saxon word I can remember.
Is Longbottom one of them?
No. I shorter, more four-letter words.
Okay. Long.
Yeah, and a tirade of them out of there, and what I might do to them. And the last one that rang me while I was doing something. I've got two hates at them. I've got loads of hates, but two on the phone. Recorded bloody messages from your bank, your building society, an organisation that can save you money. A recorded message. You pick up the phone. You're in the middle of watching your favourite soap opera. Ring, ring. Hello. Have you realised that you're owed thousands of pounds by your bank? Will you go away, you stupid bloke?
It's you.
Or woman.
It's you.
It's not me at all. It's not me at all.
I recognise that voice.
In fact, had they booked me for the voiceover, it's one I would have turned down.
Fair point.
Well, actually, it depends how much they paid. I might not. And the other one is these slivery little gits doing exactly what you said. We're from Microsoft, or it can be other companies as well. There's a problem with your computer. Could you go to it, turn it on, and we'll just help talk you through it? Yes, well, I'll do that. If you give me your address and tell me where you are, and I'll bring the computer round to you myself and watch you do it. And as soon as you say that, they put the phone down.
Mm.
Or ask for their phone. I mean, the best thing is what Rob says, put the phone down. But I'd love to catch some of these people.
Usually the phone number they'll give you will be a UK phone number, which is typically a Skype number, which will link you to somewhere else in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we should hang a few up on lampposts. That'll deter people from doing it.
What annoys me is I have to do a broadcast like that on this show. Why isn't it on 6 o'clock news? Loads of people being scammed.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. It's something we'll look at. Okay, Rob, thank you for that. Tech Talk is brought to you by Rob's micro-managed shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should bring it. You should have a little plug for the shop.
No, because then I get loads of customers.
Oh, you don't want that.
No.
Rob doesn't like it. Rob just likes doing this.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, as people know, I have a small charity for people who suffer with kidney cancer. Well, it's actually the biggest kidney cancer charity in the UK. And at the moment, there is a government campaign around for kidney and bladder cancer. And one of the ways you know whether you have kidney or bladder cancer is you pee some blood. And this campaign is called Pee in the Blood. And what the campaign is doing at the moment, it is sticking posters up in men's toilets, because these are these cancers that affect women as well as men. But they're trying to get men to do something more about it. Women will go when they have a problem, will go to a doctor's. Men don't. So they're putting them up in urinals at some of the Premier League football clubs, which I think is a pretty good idea. But I had this. I peed an enormous amount of blood. I thought I'd drunk too much red wine, standing there peeing, and it was the colour of a nice Merlot, and it was just coming out of me nonstop for what seemed like an eternity. No pain whatever, and afterwards stopped. I didn't go to the doctors. I drank copious quantities of water, thinking, oh, I'd better flush through the system, maybe little problem, and it went away. It was fine, and I'd mentioned it to my wife, and she had, in fact, actually, she walked into the bathroom where I was having a pee, and she said to me, oh, that doesn't look very good. You better go and see the doctor. And I drank all this water. I said, oh, it's gone now. I'm fine. And she said, go to the doctors. And I just ignored her and went on. And a few months later, she said, have you been to the doctors? And I said, oh, I haven't bothered. It hasn't happened since. But unbeknown to me, of course, you can have pee in your blood that isn't visible, just means you've got something going wrong. Eventually, I went to the doctors. I was diagnosed with kidney cancer, fairly advanced kidney cancer. I had an operation, had one of my kidneys removed. That was 15 years ago, nearly. I was very, very lucky. Usually, if you leave it too long, that's it. Nothing can be done. But for some reason, the tumour seemed to be quite happy where it was and hadn't moved anywhere else. It needs to be attended to as soon as you see some problem. So if you do have any pee or any blood in your pee, go and see the doctor. And if you'd like to find out more, go to the website of the charity. It's called the James Whale Fund, and it's at jameswhalefund.org. And if you need any information at all, then people at the charity will be able to help you. And furthermore, can I use this for a plug for a fundraising event at the moment, Rob?
Of course you can.
October is Britain's biggest curry party for the JWF, and we are, to raise money for the charity, we are holding curry parties all over the place. You could hold one too. You can invite your mates around. Difficult, I know, in your case, Rob. And you can either go to your favourite Indian restaurant and maybe have a collection amongst your mates, or get them all come round to your place. If you go on the website, then there are party packs which we will send to you to help organise your party and join us in Britain's biggest curry party. And I thank you very much indeed for your time. Robbo.
Yes, sir.
I think it's time. We've got coming up, by the way, a new feature in the programme where I get bored with talking about things all the time. So each week I want to know what it is you want to talk about on the programme. All right. So I get bored with the news. What do you think we should be discussing this week? And Stuart Clark says, James, do you think I should change dentist? It's an NHS one, but the receptionist's rude, and it's like they are doing me a favour going in. My suggestion, Stuart Clark, to you is if you can find another NHS dentist, then by all means change. Getting an NHS dentist is a little bit like finding hen's teeth. Oh, I made myself laugh. Just have a word. Have a word with the dentist. Say, by the way, listen, mate, your reception is particularly unfriendly. And some of them are. I must admit, some receptionists are very unfriendly, particularly in doctors and dentists. I've noticed that. You know, you go into a company and receptionists have been trained in a way they're quite polite and quite pleasant. Yes, sir. How are you today? And who have you come to see? Blah, blah, blah. You go into for a doctor And they, you know, oh, I'm very rushed, I'm very busy. Well, we're all rushed, we're all busy. So, Stuart, I feel for you, but NHS dentists are few and far between, my friend. So we'll come back in a bit and have a look at some of the things you want to talk about as well. Plus, we have the Ford EcoSport, which I have been driving for the last month. I'll give you my considered final thoughts on that. But first of all, we got a tweet, or I got a tweet some time ago from a guy who used to play keyboards with the Bee Gees. And he said he'd got some music from the Bee Gees, and he has a story to tell about the Bee Gees. He was with them, I think, from back in the 80s, and he's even got some music. Just before we talk to keyboard player for the Bee Gees, Rudy Dobson, let's hear him at it, if you'll excuse the expression. He's the keyboard player on this, and it's a live version of the Bee Gees and Secret Love.
This breaking up just hurts me more when we're apart, and there are two of us with our secret love.
Rudy, hi, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you, James.
Now, Rudy, how long did you spend with the Bee Gees?
Well, I was with them from 89 And as a result of the work that I did with the Bee Gees, I became very good friends with Robin personally, Robin Gibb.
And you spent quite a lot of time on the road with the guys as well, didn't you?
I did.
What was that like? Well, back in the 80s, particularly, and then through the 90s, when the Bee Gees were having some really exceptionally big hits, what was that like?
Well, the thing that I noticed about the Brothers Gibb particularly is that it didn't really impact on them. They were just as normal. They weren't involved in how big they were going to be. They just loved music. It wasn't about the fame. It wasn't about the money. It was just for passion of actually writing songs and creating music.
Now, I met Robin some years before he sadly died. In fact, I think we appeared on the Ken Bruce show on Radio 2 together in his pop quiz, and obviously I allowed Robin to win. It would have been rude not to. But he not only did I find him interested in music, he was really interested in the world around him, something that you perhaps sometimes don't expect musicians to be.
Oh, definitely. I mean, he was always for nature preservation, and he went out of his way to raise money for the Bomber Command for the memorial, and he donated a song for that, which was Gotta Get a Message to You.
Why do you think it was that Robin was so interested in what the men of Bomber Command did?
I think the main reason is the fact that they were never recognised for what they did. It was sort of brushed under the carpet, and everyone else seemed to be getting recognition apart from them, and they played a really important part of the Second World War.
Yeah, and he did, against some criticism, actually get involved with this. Some people said, you know, perhaps you shouldn't be involved in this. Then there was quite a lot of criticism of the carpet bombing of Dresden and various other things that went on. Do you think he was aware of that?
I think he was, but at the same time, you know, people were being bombed in this country, in Bristol, London, all the major cities. They had the same problem as well. So you can't really use that as an argument, because people in this country equally suffered the same impact of bombings in major cities around the UK.
Talk to me, Rudy, a bit about what the... you're a musician, you're a keyboard player, isn't that right?
That's correct, yeah.
What, musically speaking, what were the Bee Gees like?
Amazing musicians. In fact, a classic example would be we would be rehearsing a track, and Barry was such a perfectionist, he would ask for the track to be slowed down even by one beat per minute. So instead of it being 122, it would be 121, because they were really into feel. And one of them might say, can we change it from, say, the key of D major to F major? And they wouldn't have to work it out. They could just do it straight away, where some people would have to think about it and work it out. They were very musically minded people. There's no question.
And they also, I mean, I remember one of the stories long time ago when the Bee Gees were, if you like, in their first incarnation, because the Bee Gees sort of reinvented themselves a few times. And they were portrayed at one time of sort of having a huge Bee Gee family where they sort of all lived together, didn't they?
Well, that is sort of true, because in Miami, they all lived in the same street, so they were all neighbours with each other. And in the UK, they all lived around about 40 miles from each other. Like, for instance, Morris was in Esher, Robin was in Oxfordshire, and Barry was in Beaconsfield. So they were always in a close proximity of each other within either the UK or America. So I would think that they were quite a close family, well, very close family.
Did you travel the world with them?
I went through many cities and countries, and the thing that amazed me most of all was the following they had in every country. I mean, some fans were really to the extreme, to the event of one German fan had 5,000 Bee Gees albums. Because he would buy the American version, the Japanese version, the Italian version of all the same album.
Which country do you think they enjoyed the most?
I would say probably Europe. I would say like Germany and England, I would say. Because they had a huge fan base, you know. But having said that, they had some fans from Hong Kong that would go to every show. They would book tickets to every show, and they would stay in the same hotels. They were that dedicated. And some of the fans were like 30 years following the Brothers Gibb. It was just incredible, which I've never known. And the thing that amazed me most, James, is they always had time for them. They were never too busy to interact with the fans. Nothing was too much trouble.
Do you think they still enjoyed playing their hits? I mean, some musicians get really blasé and very bored with having to play the same few songs over and over again. Did they enjoy it?
Absolutely. But the thing was, probably because they probably don't tour or toured as often as other bands might do, then it's not like they're playing it day in, day out, 7 days a week, 24/7. They will probably tour every 4 years, maybe. So it was really nice for them because they think, you know, I haven't played that song for such a long time. So it's like playing it as a new song, if that makes sense.
Mm. Lots of people thought that they were Australians. Of course, they weren't.
No. Morris and Robin were born in the Isle of Man, and they actually grew up in Manchester. As young people, they then went to Australia and they decided to come back to England to set up their music career because the Beatles had just been launched. They were doing very well and they thought that was the place to be.
And of course, at 89, when you joined them, that was more or less the height of disco, wasn't it?
Absolutely. You probably remember that during that time, there was a backlash of disco albums and people were actually smashing up disco records and burning them because it had a bit of a bad reputation as well.
I do, and I remember that that was sort of on the cusp, if you like, of when music changed quite significantly, didn't it?
It did. But the thing that needs to be remembered is that when they did albums like Saturday Night Fever, they didn't go out to do disco. They just created music, and it just turned out that way. They didn't even know what disco really was. They never tried to do something that was the flavour of the month. They just did it.
Well, Saturday Night Fever was really the soundtrack to the movie with John Travolta, wasn't it?
It was. And it's quite a funny story about that, because apparently Robert Stigwood phoned them up, and their mother answered the phone because they weren't in. And when they got home, she said, oh, someone called Robert Sticklewood or Stickleback phoned you about an album with a guy who's got some paint. And they're thinking, all right, really great, you know, sort of thing. And then obviously they did it and they just couldn't believe the sales of the album. It became the biggest selling album, soundtrack album in the world before it was beat by Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Has anybody ever done a stage musical of Saturday Night Fever?
No, but funny you should say that. I've been asked to get involved next year with a Spanish production company. They're already doing Queen at the moment, where they want to do a Bee Gees show with a full rock band and a full orchestra of all their tracks. So I think it's probably going to be on the cards, I would have imagined.
Well, I think after the success of We Will Rock You and the Queen music, I'm surprised somebody hasn't done this already. Hey, maybe we shouldn't talk about it.
Maybe not. Maybe you've just made someone a millionaire, James, by giving them the idea.
let's move forward to the time idea, you know? We're at now, Rudy. Sadly, Robin has passed on. What do you do? How do the musicians who, I presume an enormous amount of work came your way whilst the Bee Gees were working, what do you do now? How difficult have you found it?
Well, the thing is, I think that It's not so bad for me, but I generally think that the modern shows like X Factor and Pop Idol and has got its place. But I think it's really destroyed the music industry to the extent that you're not getting singer-songwriters anymore like you used to. So you're not getting that creativity that you used to get because everything is manufactured. The singer is selected from the show. They're told what songs to sing, what producer they're going to use. They've got no control, and they're not making any money because they're not writing the songs. Because in the old days, the artists made the money from the publishing, not necessarily the record sales.
Well, hopefully there are some new talents coming forth. I don't suppose we'll know for a while, and maybe even some people who first found a little in, if you like, in programmes like that, who maybe didn't win it, but suddenly end up writing their own material. I think there are a few who've already begun to come through in that way.
I totally agree with that, but unfortunately, as you probably remember, like me, that back in the days when it was even like the 70s and the 80s and the 60s and so on, there were a lot more creative artists coming through. Now you'll probably get one or two, but then there were a lot in one period, and it just seems to have gone away, really. I mean, going back to the Bee Gees, a classic example that made me smile many years ago, there was a particular band that did a Bee Gees cover, and the person that was a fan of that band thought it was a brand new song. They didn't realise it was 30 years old. Had I told them that it was 30 years old and let them listen to the original, they probably wouldn't have liked it. It's just incredible.
So what are you up to at the moment then, Rudy?
Well, the thing I'm doing at the moment, I've got a couple of projects coming up, and I'm possibly working with a guy called Bruce Woolley and Trevor Horn on a stage play about robots, believe it or not. It's an idea that Bruce Woolley has had. So I'm sort of working on that particular project, and I'm also working with a singer from Latvia, of all places. I've been working with him for a number of years, and I want to try and push him in the UK because he has got the raw talent of an amazing singer-songwriter, and I've just produced one album of his already. So my next thing is really to start marketing him in the UK with this project.
And what happens now with the music of the Bee Gees? We're playing a couple of tracks on the programme today, of course, a couple of live tracks that you were playing on with the Bee Gees. Tell me a bit about these. When were they?
Those were in 1991, and that actual track that you're going to play was actually performed in Salzburg City Square. So it was an open event, and the real pleasure for me is the listeners of this show will be the first time that anyone publicly would have heard these tracks. There has never, ever been any copies of these tracks anywhere because I have the originals directly from the desk. So your listeners are going to be listening to something that is totally unique.
How did you get them directly from the desk?
Because obviously being in the band, for instance, I used to get the engineer to record all the shows so I could use them as references. So if I've missed something from that show, I could improve it on the next show. You can hear what mistakes were made. So it's a bit like a reference book, really. And that's why I used to do that. And I used to video all the rehearsals as well for the same reason.
I have to say that having listened to this, it's remarkably good quality for a live recording.
Well, I was amazed. Obviously, we had good sound engineers. And believe it or not, I've also got a recording of what the BBC did at Wembley, which was absolutely atrocious. And for this to come directly for the desk as it was incredible, really. So what you're hearing on that recording is effectively exactly what the audience listened to, because it was the full mix of what it was on that day at that time.
How are the family of the Bee Gees now getting on? How are their friends and the business? I mean, the Bee Gees were kind of a corporation, really, at one time, weren't they?
Well, I think things sort of went sort of quiet for them when Morris died, which was obviously a big shock. And then, obviously, there was problems between Barry and Robin because of Morris's death, because they weren't going to continue with the Brothers Gibb. But Robin just continued anyway and did his own thing. And then one thing that was absolutely amazing that Robin did before he died, he did an album with his son called the Titanic Requiem. Mm. And it was there's only one vocal song on the whole album, actually. The rest is absolutely just orchestral. And that was probably the last he did. And then, as you probably know, Robin got really sick and then ended up in hospital in a coma. And the amazing thing was they kept playing Bee Gees songs, and they played I Started a Joke, and it brought him out of his coma. He was actually mouthing the words whilst he was coming out of his coma with that song. It was unbelievable.
Brilliant story. Brilliant story.
Yeah.
Rudy, thank you so much for sharing this with us today, and thank you for allowing us to play a couple of tracks from the square in Salzburg in 1991.
That's correct.
Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed, my friend. That is brilliant.
No, it's been a pleasure, James.
Thanks, Rudy.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm not.
There we are, the Bee Gees, and live from Salzburg, Staying Alive. Our thanks to Rudy for giving us the music and also giving us an insight in what it was like to be with the Bee Gees at the height of their fame as well. Thanks, Rudy, very much indeed. This is James Whale. You're listening to the James Whale Radio Show. Of course, if you've enjoyed this one, even if you've hated it, who cares? If you've enjoyed this one, we've got another 50-odd, very odd, me talking to people like Boy George, like Nigel Farage. There we are, just two different ends of the spectrum amongst other people. And if you go to the website, jamesworldradio.co.uk, you can listen to as many as you want, can't you?
There's loads of things on that website.
Mm. And a friend of mine, a broadcasting friend of mine, Tony Fisher, who's just subscribed to the programme. He has it on his iPhone, and he gets them sent every week. And the other interesting thing, of course, is that if you go to the website, jamesworldradio.co.uk, we've got all sorts of things up there, and quite a lot of my old TV shows are there as well, aren't they?
Yep, lots of videos.
Now, in The Independent this week, comments by England's chief medical officer, Dame Sally Davis. She's backing a call for a ban on smoking in public parks and squares, as well as inside. The recommendation is made in a report drawn up for the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, by the cancer surgeon and former health minister, Lord Darzi. And the fact that it was on the front page of the Daily Mail, which also leads with a story, says campaigners have denounced the idea as an outrageous attack on personal liberties. I tell you, my friends, what is an outrageous attack on personal liberties? It is having to walk down the street and see a bunch of junkies standing outside their place of work shaking because they haven't been able to get a fix of their favourite drug. I don't care what you do. You can do anything you want to yourself. It's your life. But don't inflict it on the rest of us. And don't start moaning, oh, well, what about all the pollution from cars? It's a completely different thing. If you want to smoke, find somewhere away from anybody who doesn't want it and do it there. I just cannot understand why restaurants and places of work facilitate places outside for them to go and stand. You walk down the street quite often. You can't get away from them because the pavement is crowded. And they start, I don't want my children or my grandchildren or your children to have to look at these people and then be told, well, they're addicts. I mean, how would you feel if somebody was there shooting up or chasing the dragon or any of these other things publicly? So good on them. At least I think this is a step in the right direction. I must admit, I think in parks, perhaps a lot. But if there are lots of people there, no, you don't want to be seen smoking. But stop people smoking outside where they work. You know, if you want to smoke, I wouldn't smoke. It'll kill you. But if you want to smoke, go and do it where you are completely on your own and there is nobody else around you. Don't do it in your own home if you've got children. If you haven't got children, smoke as much as you like. I actually think the government missed a trick. I think they should probably have given licenses for smoking establishments. So therefore, if you work in it, you give your permission to work in a place that could damage your health because of the smoke. And only people who don't mind it go there. I think they missed a trick, to be quite honest with you. Smoking dens. You know, back in Victorian times, they had opium dens, smoking dens. Great idea. If you want to do that, fine, but stay away from the rest of us. And also, while I'm on this, can we not make it illegal to smoke while you're driving a car? You can't use your telephone, quite rightly, whilst you're driving a car. Why, therefore, can you have a piece of lighted material that may fall on your nether regions while you're driving and cause an accident? In fact, it's been proved that quite a number of accidents have been caused by people doing just that. So, you know, it's a free country and you can smoke if you want, but not where somebody else is going to. How would you like it if after I'd had a few drinks, I put the residual, what you got rid of afterwards, all over you? Think about it. You know, I don't want what you've had in your mouth blown out all over me and me breathing it in. You probably don't want the alcohol that I've ingested sprayed out all over you, do you? So smoking, don't do it. And let's have, you know, companies that put those little stupid fag ash things outside and give them a little like a bus stop shelter to say you're encouraging them. You're encouraging them. You know, if you want to help these people, get them some kind of psychiatric or medical help to give up smoking. If they don't want to give up smoking, then make sure that they realize they can't come to work and smoke. And they can't have 5 minutes off here and 5 minutes off there to go and have a fag. I can't have 5 minutes to go down the pub, can I?
Well, if you're asking me, then yes, you can go when you like.
I feel better about that now. I got that off my chest. I was so angry when I saw that in the paper. And those organisations, yeah, we're all about freedom. People should be allowed to do what they want. No, that's not freedom. Because if you are allowed to do anything you want, that means I'd be able to go out. Oh, well, I won't tell you what I might be able to go out and do. That would get in the way of somebody else's freedom. Of course, freedom is give and take. And it's not freedom for people who are addicted to a substance that is going to cause them an enormous amount. I know somebody, a friend of mine who's 45 at the moment. He's going on and on and on about he smoked for ages and he's fine. Yeah, my mum smoked all her life. My mother was very fit. She used to be a professional dancer. She smoked when it was okay to do it. And she smoked and smoked and 60 a day, all that sort of thing. And then she got to 70. Then she developed cancer and that killed her. So it's not now. And people go, oh, I've been smoking for years. I'm fine. It will eventually do something to you that you won't like. Downside of giving up smoking? Yeah. Well, there is a downside that I have found. The upside is that I there's two downsides. One downside is that I never used to go into the pubs as much as I do now. I go, and people say, well, nobody goes to the pubs anymore. Well, I go much more because it's a nice place to go. You can have a drink. You can have a chat with your mates. You can have something to eat. And you don't come home smelling disgusting. The other downside is that sometimes you can smell the urinals.
What?
When you go into a pub sometimes, they're not keeping the place spotlessly clean. The smell of the smoke used to disguise the smell of the pee.
Ah, got you.
But now it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Okay. James Whale Radio Show. James Whale Radio Show. James Whale Radio Show. That's where you're tuned at the moment. Okay. How much time have I got left this week?
A few minutes.
Good. I want to go through some of the things you wanted me to talk about and give you... And I want to do this as a regular every week, okay? Paul Rudd. Hello, Paul. He says, is it too early to put up the Christmas decorations? Nah, listen, Paul. If you want... I mean, there have been... Christmas trees put up in department stores and hotels already, apparently. I'm not a great Christmas person myself. Merry Christmas, by the way. But if you want to do it, you do it, okay? Nearer Christmas time, we should talk about what does Christmas mean to you and see how many people get all sort of serious about it. Oh, well, it's terribly, it's religious and whatever. I always like to have a go at that at Christmas. Because I went to a school, you know, I went to a sort of the local village church school when I was growing up. And it wasn't until I got to about 14 or so that I realised I'm being taught things, particularly around Christmas, that weren't true. Claire Mendelssohn says, whether the criminal Columbus should still be celebrated. Why was he a criminal? Yeah, it's an interesting point, Claire. Very interesting point. If he hadn't discovered America, what would be there now? It was Columbus who discovered America, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, definitely.
Mm. Eric Whistler wants to know, what impact will the Panorama program have on UKIP? I should think the same sort of impact that the Panorama program has on anything it covers. Nothing, really. Annie Humphreys, Green Party being left out of pre-election televised debates. Odd, considering they also have one MP, same as UKIP, who have a place alongside the main three and are more popular than the Lib Dems. Annie, yeah. Are the Green Party still going? I didn't think anybody followed that sort of thing now. Rob Murphy says, as Halloween is round the corner, how about ghost stories? Anybody wants to write me a short ghost story, I will include it in the program. I quite like ghost stories. So if anybody wants to get a ghost story, can recommend a book of short stories, you know, about 5 minutes long, we could include one on the program, couldn't we?
We're having one of these ghost hunters on the program in next month, I think.
Oh, well, there we are. We've done it. We've done it.
Yeah.
Tim Summers wants to know, well, you know what you want to know, Tim, and I shouldn't think it's going to be any time soon, possibly when somebody else has bought them. Right. Another Tim South, he says, why does council tax get frittered away on unimportant things? Well, probably because you're voting for the wrong councillors. You know, when the election comes up, if you don't like what they're spending it on, you can go and you can change them. David Hoy says, let's discuss how people just let things happen these days. There is no fight left in anybody anymore. They just let things happen. Have a little moan and get back to the iPad. No men with fire in their guts. Where have they gone? I know you're still a man, but you've lost some of the fire and passion. Really, David? All you've done is moan about me, you silly tusspot. You know, if you can think of something to moan about other than people not moaning, then that would be good. And then maybe you could do something about it, David. Eh? Wake up, man! Oh, dear, oh, dear. Well, a couple more. Very quickly, we're going to run out of time. Josh says, Judy Finnegan and whether she has single-handedly rescued loose women. No, I don't think she has. I mean, I read the story, you know. I quite frankly, I don't understand why a program like Loose Women. I've been on Loose Women. I think if you go on the website, you can probably see the video of me being on Loose Women. Can you?
Yep, it's there. Yep.
Yeah, it's there. A couple of years ago, I think Loose Women ran out of steam some time ago, but they just can't think of anything to replace it. What about Loose Men? We could go on it. No. I'd be happy to go on a program called Loose Men.
Okay.
Yeah. We have nearly run out of time, but I want to finish this this program with my thoughts on the new EcoSport by Ford, a new car that has just come out, and I have been driving it for the last month. Now, it's what they call a sort of an SUV, and it's pretty good. It's very economical to drive. You get the feeling while you're in it that you're in a sort of a large four-wheel drive, but of course you're not. It's eco. It gives you very, very good economy as far as fuel is concerned. Even the way I drive, which is not good, I'm getting nearly 40 miles to the gallon out of it. You can get 60 out of it if you drive it like a proper person. I prefer to try. I'm lazy as well. I like to drive an automatic. This one has gears, very easy gears. They just flow from one to the other. Great visibility. The onboard computer is amazing. I mean, it does all kinds of stuff. And this is a basic model. It's got all sorts of stuff in there. The Bluetooth hands-free system, which is in most cars now, isn't it, Rob? You don't have to get an extra one and put it in. That comes in most cars. It's really good. Your phone connects to it incredibly easy. The visibility front and rear is excellent. I would say the couple of things, that the wing mirrors don't clear early in the morning. I go out and do a radio show early in the morning. The wing mirrors take a while to clear, which is a bit of an annoyance. And the other thing, the back door opens like an ordinary door. You know, the hinge is on the side, not on the top. So it opens sideways out. The seats go down very easily, and there's loads of room in the Ford EcoSport. But the top of the door is in exactly line with my eye. And if you're not very careful, you can walk into it. And the top is bent over. I think that's a slight design fault. I think they need to put a rubber strip along the top of the back door. But I have to say, if you like me to be a little bit higher, like to be a bit higher off the ground, have more visibility, it's a pretty nippy little car. And loads of people look at it. That's always a good thing, isn't it? So you want to find out more? Go to your local Ford dealer and ask about the EcoSport. That's about it, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Well, I thank you for your time, sir.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And you want to get in touch, some things you want to tell us, then jameswellradio@gmail.com is where you should head. Until the next time, I bid you adieu.
Sayonara.
What?
Is it sayonara or sayonara?
I don't know. Why can't you speak Anglo-Saxon? You've been very keen on the Anglo-Saxon on the show this week.
Okay, I'll say goodbye in Anglo-Saxon. Are you ready?
Go on then. Yeah.
Longbottom.
You're in trouble.
James Whale, the voice of reason on the James Whale Radio Show.
You're listening to the James Whale Radio Show. For more information, visit www.jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Why not check us out on facebook.com/JamesWhaleRadioShow or follow James on Twitter @TheJamesWhale. James Whale, the voice of reason.